coming to you from Milwaukee, Wisconsin, by way of Stone Mountain, Georgia, birthed by the great state of South Carolina, is the Bryant Land Country Podcast, your place for any and everything in hunting, fishing, sports, and outdoor related, with heavy doses of randomness, guests, and an all-around good time. Here's your host, proud Gamecock, South Carolina forever, AB3.
Hello and welcome to another episode of the Bryant Land Country Podcast. I am your host, AB3. Thank you for joining us for another stupendous, magnificent podcast. Thank you for downloading and listening to the podcast on whatever podcast medium you choose to get your audio from. We thank you. Remember to leave us those 5-star ratings on iTunes or Apple Podcast, I guess is what they're calling themselves now. If you're listening on the Apple Podcast, Stitcher, TuneIn app, Google Play, Podbean, Radio Play, wherever you are listening, we say thank you. This week, I'm not going to waste any time. We're going to bring you part 2 of Hunting with a Camera, my conversation with Lance Krueger on the Bryant Land Country Podcast. My background, you know, is in sports television. So, you know, cameras and, you know, TV and stuff. And then here lately in the last couple of years, I've started dabbling in photography and just using, you know, DSLRs more with video and photography. What kind of equipment are you shooting on? And do you carry multiple cameras? Do you kind of have like one camera that's your baby, or like, how does that work for you?
I use all Canon professional DSLR cameras. I have basically 3 cameras that I use right now, but I'm trying, you know, constantly trying to upgrade as the technology comes in and stuff like that. I use the Canon 5D Mark IV camera body as my primary camera because it's so quiet. I also use a Canon 1D Mark IV, which is kind of my speed camera, kind of faster type of camera. And then I also use a Canon 7D Mark II, which is a speed camera, but it's got a smaller sensor that allows, basically magnifies the image a little bit more, and you can shoot further out and get the same image size. But as far as lenses go, probably the question I get asked by more people is, what lenses do you use? I know why they're wanting to know it, and I'll tell you the reason why after I tell you what lenses I use. But basically, I use primarily a Canon 300mm 2.8 image stabilized lens, and then I also use a Canon 500mm f4 lens. A stabilized lens also. And a lot of people think, oh man, that's that big, huge lens. It's basically the same lenses that you see on the sidelines at football games and basketball games and stuff like that.
Right.
These big, huge, yep, white lenses that people are thinking, yep, man, you can photograph a deer. And I have people tell me this all the time. Man, I bet you could photograph a deer at 1,000 yards and see the flies on his eyelashes. Well, no, you can't. Most of my photos
that's
are taken 50
works.
Yards and less. Yeah. So anyway, so the lenses are designed to gather light mainly, and that's why they're so big around. But the focal length of them, basically a 300mm lens is the same as a 6X binocular or a 6X rifle scope, which, you know, a lot of guys use 6X rifle scopes, but very few people ever use a 6X binocular because it hardly magnifies it at all. My 500mm lens is the same as a 10X binocular or rifle scope, which is a popular focal length for binoculars. You know, 10X binoculars are pretty popular. And so are, you know, like 10X rifle scopes, or 3-9 rifle scopes, or, you know, 4-14, you know, zoom rifle scopes. Well, my lenses are fixed focal length. They don't zoom or anything. They're just a fixed magnification lens. But that 500mm lens is only like a 10X rifle scope or binoculars. So you still have to be pretty close to get the deer, you know, filling the frame or getting a head and shoulders portrait. But what people want to do, and the reason people are always asking me, you know, what lenses do you use? The reason why they're thinking that I'm using like a 1200mm lens or a 2000mm lens or something like that. I could go out there and buy whichever lens that I want. The ones I've decided on are like a 300mm lens and a 500mm lens. And the reason why I've decided on those lenses is because they're not so monstrously huge like a 1200mm lens would be, and it doesn't cost $150,000. What I do is I physically, instead of trying to bring the deer into me with a lens and magnify the deer, I put myself closer to where I think the deer is going to be. most people think I shoot all these big, long focal length lenses and basically shoot them from 500 yards away. But I'm not. I'm shooting them 50 yards and less, preferably 15 yards, 20 yards. Most of my photos are like 20 to 25 yards. And so what I do is, you know, a lot of places I go to are set up for hunting where you've got, you know, especially here in Texas, you have a deer feeder set out and right. you've got a blind that's 100 yards away. Or you've got a deer blind that's on the edge of hardwoods in the Midwest and overlooking a cornfield or a soybean field or a food plot that's 100 yards away. Well, it's set up for gun hunting. What I'm trying to do, and when I'm in those scenarios, is I move my blind. I take my own personal blinds with me, my photo blinds, which are pop-up type blinds, you know, like double bull type hub blinds, and I will put them at the distance that I want to be and with the background and lighting angle that I think is going to be best for that scenario. Like, let's say that there's a deer feeder set up at a place. They've got a blind at 100 yards. I know that if I sit in that blind, I'll see deer that first afternoon. Where if I put a pop-up blind, I've got to let it sit there for at least 3 days before I can sit in it for the deer to get used to it. But I know that it's worth that amount of time of investing and letting that blind soak at that place, letting the deer come into that feeder, which they're coming into. You know, trail camera's telling me there's a big buck hanging out at this particular feeder. And so the deer come into the feeder. They see this blind at 20 yards away. And they're like, oh, wee, what's that? You know, they're not sure of it. And they may spook from it the first day. But during the night, they'll come over and they'll actually get downwind of it, try to smell it. Okay, there's no humans inside. There's some human scent on it, but it's not strong enough that I know there's not a human inside of it. They'll go up, they'll start sniffing the material, the camo material. Then they think, okay, well, there's nothing wrong with this. They'll go back to feeding. And they'll keep checking it out. And after about 3 days, they've gotten used to that blind enough that they're not afraid of it anymore. And so that's when I'll go in and I'll sit in that blind myself. But you notice, instead of sitting in the sure thing, which is the elevated blind, you know, that's 15, 20 feet up in the air, which I don't shoot down on deer because it makes them look small. Plus, I'm not at 100 yards. I'm at 20 yards away at the perfect distance where if a deer comes in, I'm going to probably get some good photos of him because it's going to be frame filling shots because I'm only 20 yards away or 30 yards away. And I'm using my lenses at the proper distance for those lenses. I'm not trying to magnify them like I would be with a spot and scope or something like that from 100 yards away, 200 yards away. I'm photographing them really, really up close. So I put myself closer to the subject, whether it's a scrape, a rub, a mineral lick, a feeder, a food plot, you know, whatever the situation is, a deer trail, I will put myself where I will get a good photo if the deer comes in. And it's with wildlife photography, it's an all or nothing situation. If the deer doesn't cooperate where you could have seen him from the blind, well, then I get nothing. But if he does come in, I'm going to get something good. So I set myself in all or nothing situations where it's either 100%, you know, success or 100% failure. And, you know, it's a high risk situation. You're risking that you're not going to see anything from that blind up close to 20 yards. You know that if you sit in the blind that's out there year round, that's been out there the last 5 years, the deer are totally accustomed to that. That blind could be, you know, pink and purple polka dots. They're going to be used to it. You know, and I always laugh because, you know, people are always camoing out their blinds and stuff like that. Well, the deer only, you know, don't even care about that. I mean, it could be any color you want, you know. As long as it sits out there and it's not hurting them, within the first 3 days, they're going to figure out if that blind's going to hurt them or not. And they're not going to be wary of that blind after, you know, a few days.
Do you take the time and brush them in and stuff too? Or you just pop them up, set them, and let them sit?
If I brush them in, that does cut the amount of time down where I could probably sit in it the first day. But the problem is that most of the time, there's usually not proper place for me to put my blind up against brush or whatever.
Right.
And a lot of times, because I'm trying to get the most amount of light in, I'm kind of out in the open because I don't want the brush and the trees behind me to cut the light getting to the place that I think the deer is going to be. Talking about that lighting angle and all that kind of stuff,
yep.
I've got to worry about trying to get enough light in there that the deer's coming in right at dark where I get the maximum amount of light into that spot where that deer is going to, you know, where I'm hoping that deer is going to be. And so a lot of times I'm placing the blinds. If I can, I place them up against trees. I'll try to place them against brush if I can, if it's not going to affect the light too much. And then in those situations, you can brush them in. But if it's sitting out in the middle of you know, where the closest tree is 10 feet away from it, it's just a big old blob that's there. It's not going to matter if you brush them in or not. The only way it works is if you brush it in existing brush that's already there, and you try to blend it in with it, where you're like back in the brush a little ways, kind of the hole that you're going to be shooting your photo out of is like on the outside edge of the brush where, you know, that's where your hole is, where you're shooting.
Yep.
Then you want to brush it in and stuff like that. That would help out. And I'd be able to sit in it quicker. But usually I've got that thing sitting out there kind of in the wide open. I mean, there's woods around and, you know, all that kind of stuff. But if you back it up against a bunch of brush, it's going to be getting darker earlier in that spot because the light's not, you know, is basically shaded by that brush that you're using to hide from that animal. So I usually like to let it sit there in the open for 3 days. Now with turkeys, you can set it up and in 5 minutes be calling turkeys in to that spot. Turkeys don't care. But deer, the minimum I want to set a blind up is like 3 days. Mm-hmm. And I sit in them all the time after 3 days.
Wow.
But I mean, it's better if it's been sitting there a week or two. I mean, the longer it sits there, the more they get used to it. But typically, 3 days is about the minimum before I sit in. I have sat in blinds before because I was in a place for such a short time. I only had like 2 days
right.
in a place.
That's what I was going to ask
and
you.
And I would
okay.
sit in it. I'd sit in it the second day, and the deer will come out. But, man, they're spooky. I mean, a lot of times you'll see them on the edge of the brush, and, you know, they'll never come out and really get in the spot that you need. So it's kind of a high-risk situation sitting on them that quick to me.
Now, when you pop them up, do you leave them open, like leave the windows and stuff down, or you seal them up and then come back and obviously open them up when you sit in? Because I've heard different theories about that as well.
Well, what I try to do is I try to make it look just like what they'll see when they walk in, when I'm sitting in there. Okay, I don't want to like open up a bunch of windows and have a bunch of big black spots where they're looking into it. What I do is I actually take, because my lenses are kind of big around, they're about a foot across, you know, big circles that I have the lens hood sticking out of the blind, out of the window of the blind. What I do is I have taken tea jugs, big plastic pitchers, cut the top rim off of it and cut the handle off of it. And I put the same camo tape on the outside of that. And I will take wire, drill holes in the base of it, where you'd basically set the jug down on the table if you were using it as a tea jug, and put wires, and I attach that to the inside of my blind and poke those out of the windows so that when they come in, like let's say that you didn't have those fake lens hoods sticking out. They'll come in and, you know, they've gotten used to this blind looking a certain way. And if you had the windows open or closed, when you poke a lens out, it's going to look totally different. With that lens poking out of that, they're going to be like, they're going to have to like relearn the whole setup again. Now, if you're a bow hunter and you just open the windows up and you're sitting back in the back edge of the blind, the back side of the blind, that's how you want to make it look, how you're going to be hunting it with just a black open hole there, basically where the windows unzipped. Mm-hmm. But with me, I'm trying to get to the front edge so that I can pan around left and right in that window and be able to photograph a deer as he's walking in. Or let's say that two bucks get in a fight. I want to be able to photograph them the whole time that they're visible. Okay, if I'm way in the back of the blind, I've got a very small area that I can photograph. So I'm always, right up at the front edge of the blind and right up by the windows. So I want to make that blind look exactly the same way as when that deer walks in. Or what he's gotten used to. And so what I'll do is when I get in, go to the blind, I'll take those fake tea jugs out of the windows that look like lenses sticking out of the blind, and I'll put those in the blind, and I'll stick my lenses there, and it looks like the exact same thing sitting there. And then I actually use wires because the wind will like kind of blow them around a little bit, and you'll get a little bit of movement with them. So they kind of get used to the movement of that lens hood moving around, just like I'll do a little bit of movement, you know, moving around with the deer as he's walking around. Another thing that I do that most people do not realize or think about, and I see it all the time. I was actually watching a guy on a turkey hunting video on Instagram this morning, and people tend to camo out inside the blind, thinking that's the proper thing to wear inside the blind because the outside of the blind is camouflage. Well, think about it. You're not wanting to camo out with the outside of the blind. You're wanting to camo out with what's inside the blind. What's on the inside of a pop-up blind? They black them out,
right.
You know, so that there's no silhouette or anything. What I do is I wear black jackets, black shirts, black head nets, black gloves inside so that it takes you cannot see the movement of the black against black. When you have camo against black, you got tree branches that are almost white. Like if you look at like real tree camo and some of the different ones,
yep,
the branches are like almost solid white. Well, think about that white movement against the black, the contrast of the two inside that blind. The deer are going to see you moving in the camouflage much easier than if you're wearing everything black inside.
Yeah, it puts them on
and
high
so,
alert.
It does, because they can see that movement. There's still contrast. What you want to do is eliminate all contrast in the blind. And basically, contrast is the difference between lights and darks. And so by being inside the blind, it's cutting the light that's getting into that blind. And so if you're in black against black behind you of the blind material behind you, they're not going to be able to see you. I put camouflage tape on the hood of my lens, but on the rest of my lens that's further in, and that's only the part that's going to be sticking out because I want it to blend in with the outside of the blind. But for the behind my lens hood, all the way back to my camera body, my lenses are white because they're Canon lenses. Well, that's going to be terrible contrast. I will cover up the back half of my lens with black tape. It's called gaffer's tape.
Right. Okay.
And I use that black cloth tape on the lens. And I'm sure you've been in the, you know, directing and production side of things. You use lots of gaffer's tape.
Oh, yeah.
Well, I use that on my lenses. And that's how I try to cut the contrast on my lenses. And when I'm moving them around, they can't see them if it's black, you know, the black gaffer's tape on the lens against the black background and against my black clothing and all that stuff.
And see, I was wondering about that because, like you said, I obviously see those big lenses and stuff, you know, in my travels, you know, doing basketball and baseball and whatnot. Do you also use almost like I call it a shooting stick. I know it's probably not the proper term for it, but do you also use like a shooting stick to kind of steady with those lenses, or do you just hand hold it and free hold everything?
No, actually what you're talking about from, football, you know, stadiums and stuff like that, they call them monopods. And,
yes.
Basically a monopod means one leg. Tripod means three legs. I do have a monopod inside the blind with me most of the time with a shorter lens on it, like a 70 to 200 zoom or something like that. But typically what I want to do is when I'm set up in a blind, I want there to be as little movement as possible when a deer comes in. And when am I going to want to move that lens around or put that lens out of that window is when a big buck walks in. Well, that's when he's going to most likely see you. So I don't want to hand hold that lens and try to stick it out the window and him see the movement of that lens poking out of the blind that he might have been watching for 30 minutes from the woods that I didn't even know he was even there. And so I don't want that movement of that lens coming projecting out of that blind. And so what I do is I set up a tripod, sometimes two tripods, and I'll have both lenses on each tripod in front of me, and they're sitting there totally motionless. The deer could stand there and watch me for an hour, and I'm not even knowing he's there. He's back in the woods. He's watching, you know, to see if any movement at all. And then he finally thinks, okay, I think it's safe to go in. He walks up, and then I start shooting, and there's no movement whatsoever. So I don't want him to see any sort of movement at all. So I use a tripod. If I'm photographing animals that are used to movement or I'm walking around with animals, like let's say in Yellowstone National Park with the elk and stuff like that, where they're born used to people, that situation there, you can use a tripod or, you know, I might hand hold a lot too without a tripod or even without a monopod because you're moving around. They're used to the noises of cameras. They're used to people. They see tourists every day of their life. And so that's a situation there where I might hand hold. But when I'm sitting in blinds, I do not hand hold. I do everything off of a tripod. It keeps the photo steadier. You get sharper images. Plus, it holds the camera. Basically, it's like a very expensive camera holder that just holds the camera, so I don't have to be holding it in that hole for 2 hours before a deer shows up and my arms are all, you know, burning and hurting and all that stuff. I just put my hands up to the camera that's already sitting there at the exact spot that I want it. I just put my hands up there, adjust my ball head, and maybe move it a half inch or an inch if left or right if I need to frame the deer, and boom, shoot the photos.
Nice. Nice, man. You got this set up down pat. Golly, that's
awesome.
Man,
I could go into so much more about the blinds and how I do my blinds. I mean, I've really gotten it down to a fine-tuned machine that I've learned over the years. And, you know, I used to not do all the stuff that I do. And every year I learn stuff every year that I apply and I test stuff. And I could sit here for the next 6 hours and tell you about just how I do my blinds and how I do my setups. But anyway, we don't have that much time.
But no, I enjoy, it's funny because I enjoy hunting out of a blind, like more like even when, you know, I go like with my son and stuff, we do, you know, majority, you know, blinds. If we're, you know, we may, you know, spot and stalk a little bit, you know, like small game and stuff, but any kind of like deer and turkeys and, even hogs, you know, kind of just like setting up a blind and sitting in there. It's so much easier. It's easier to get in there. You know, you put on your black, like you say, and you just kind of like fade in to the background. So no, this has been, you know, really informative for me, and I'm pretty sure for, like I said, a lot of my listeners, just as far as setting up blinds, because there's so much information or so many like wives tales when you're setting up blinds and stuff. Like you said, you know, for turkeys, I know you can pretty much pop it up the same day within a couple hours. Like you said, the turkeys are coming in, but for deer, man, everything that I've ever read or heard just talking to people is just like, if you don't brush that thing in, you're not giving yourself a chance. And, you know, just to listen to you talk about it, it kind of confirms what I've been learning on my own. It's just like, I don't know about that, because I put blinds up, and like you said, if I put them up early enough, you know, like in the summer, you know, like June, July, whatever, let them sit. By the time I'm headed out there in September, October, it's like it's part of the, you know, it's part of the landscape. They don't really care.
Right. Yeah. Very true. Very true. But you don't need to leave them out there as long as what a lot of people think. You don't need to leave them out there for months, because the other problem is that those blinds, every day that they're out there, every hour they're out there, they're getting hit by the UV rays of the sun, and they're made of cloth. And so they're going to start getting bleached out into the point where they're brittle. And so, you know, a lot of these blinds are, you know, like, you know, my favorite kind of blind out there is the, oh, what are they called? The double bull blinds made by Primos.
Yep.
Those things are $400. You know, you don't want, you let it sit out there for one season, and it's going to be, you know, if you set it out there in the summertime and let it sit out there until December, that thing's going to be toast. That's going to be a $450 investment. I want them to try to last a few years if I can. All the rain, all the wind, all that stuff is taking a toll on the material of that blind. So I'm trying to leave it out there as little as possible, so that it lasts as long as it can, and my investment in that blind will be, you know, last as long as possible, and I'll get the, you know, most return for the investment. I put them out there for as long as I need, but I'm pulling them out the second that I don't need them out there. And, you know, there's no reason to set them up in June or July. If you can set it up 2 weeks in advance instead of 3 months in advance, set it up 2 weeks in advance, that's going to be more than enough time where the deer are going to be totally used to it, and it's just going to be another bush or blob out there to them. You know, you can even do it a week in advance. I mean, I do it as short as 3 days. I would prefer it if it was a week or 2 weeks, because the longer you let it sit there, the more they get used to it. But 3 days is kind of where I've had a lot of success, where they're not super spooky. Some of them might be spookier than others at 3 days. A week, they're pretty much used to it. 2 weeks, they're used to it. So I, you know, but I'm not wanting to set, I don't set up a blind in the summer just so they have 3 months of getting used to it. I mean, that'd be fine if you were doing a wood blind, plywood blind, box blind or something like that, or a redneck blind or something like that,
right.
That's made of fiberglass, then you're going to want those out there year-round. And that's why you do that, is so that, you know, it'll be out there year-round. That's the ideal situation, where a blind is already there, you know, that's been sitting there for 3 years. I mean, it's really a part of the landscape. But with a pop-up blind, you got to think about, you know, how long is this thing going to last? Because none of them are going to last forever. You know, they'll last a season or two of sitting out there all season, and then they're going to be toast.
Gotcha. Gotcha. Another thing that I was looking at going through your information that really jumped off the page to me, like I said, you know, me and my son, we go out and we hunt. A lot of times it's me hunting and him holding the camera, or he's kind of gotten to the point now where he likes, you know, like even if nothing comes along, he'll turn the camera on and shoot, you know, like the birds or the squirrels, and, you know, get real tight and follow them and whatnot. So, you know, it's really good bonding time for us when we're out there. You've taken that to a whole new level with your kids. You guys homeschool them, which I think is completely awesome, especially if you're fortunate enough to do that. But you also take them out on the road with you. Tell us a little bit about that.
Yeah, actually, 6 years ago, we had our kids in public school, and, you know, we had been thinking ever since my wife and I got married, we would love to be able to take them on the road. Actually, I had the idea before she and I got married that I wanted to not have a home, have a motor home and travel around the United States 12 months of the year and not have a home base. and just travel and photograph. Well, we never did that. She wasn't up for that. So
I was wondering how that was going to go over.
Not too well. We're not doing it. Let's put it that way. That's how well it went over. So what we, you know, wanted to do was to be able to homeschool our kids. And so my wife was home with the kids, you know, for like the first 7 years we were married, and we were in the baby making phase of our lives, but we never homeschooled them because we have four kids. And so when our oldest daughter was ready for kindergarten, we still had a little tiny one in and all that stuff. And, you know, she was trying to, you know, nurse babies and take care of kids and all that kind of stuff. And so we never did the homeschooling thing from the beginning like we had hoped to. So we had them in public school and that kind of thing. And then my wife went back to work. She's a registered nurse after we were kind of done with the baby making phase of our lives. And she was working at a place where she was not able to, you know, be able to take off like she can with the current job she has. And so, you know, I would fly everywhere. I'd fly all over the United States and do my trips and do my photo shoots. Well, I'd come back home, tell my kids about all these awesome things that I saw, all these neat things that I got to do, tell them about these neat lodges I got to stay in. And, you know, you could just tell they weren't that interested in it because, you know, it was, you know, they didn't get to go do it. So I told my wife, I said, if there's any way possible, I would love for y'all to travel with me on my photo shoots. I'm already spending the money getting to these places. And so she ended up changing her job. And for a year, we tested out the job to see if we would be able to do what we were hoping we could do with the homeschooling. We figured it out after a year. Yeah, we can do this. And so the next year, we pulled all our kids out. My youngest son was in kindergarten at the time. He only had gone to kindergarten as in public school. And then my oldest daughter was in, I think she was about to go into her freshman year in high school. And so we took all four of them out and we started traveling. And my wife, since she still works, she and I tag team on the homeschooling where she will teach them on the days that she's off, on the days she doesn't work. And I homeschool them on the days that she does work because I've got the flexible schedule working out of my home here because my office is in one of our bedrooms of our house. So what we do, you know, she's able to book her clients because she's self-employed as a nurse consultant, and she will book her clients at the beginning of one month and the end of the next month. And what she can do is she will have like a 3 to 4 week period where she will be able to travel with me, and we take all the kids and we go to Michigan and Minnesota, Wisconsin. We've gone out west. We've done Yellowstone National Park, the Grand Tetons, Mount Rushmore. My kids said 1 year they want to go to the south. So we went to Florida, Louisiana, Tennessee, Georgia, Kentucky, all over the place. We've been all over the United States, and we just do different trips and try to educate them in being able to see the things that they don't see down here in South Texas. Down where we live, we don't have bald eagles. We don't have apple trees. We've got orange trees down where I live. This is a big citrus area down here because it's like subtropical down here. We have palm trees where I live, but they, you know, they don't get to see pine trees like, you know, y'all have got up in the, you know, south in the Midwest. They've never seen an apple on a tree. They've gotten to see bald eagles. They've gotten to, you know, make snowmen. It doesn't snow down here where I live. It does like once every, you know, 50 years or so, something like that.
You're very fortunate.
They've been able to ride snowmobiles. They've been able to sit in blinds with me. And my son and daughter, I've got two kids that are interested in, you know, sitting down with me. The other two are interested in other things. So I'm not a forceful type of person that I make them sit out in an environment that they're not comfortable in and stuff like that. I've got a son that is a big time hunter. That's all he thinks about is shooting guns and his bow and arrow and sitting in the blind with me and all that. And I've got a daughter that is interested in that as well. And she's shot all kinds of stuff, you know, around the United States. But they're able to sit there with me. And a lot of times when I get a photo published, you know, my son will say, "Hey, Dad, I remember I was sitting there with you when we shot that." Or, you know, he's been on several photo shoots where I've gotten covers and he's been sitting there with me and my daughter's been sitting there. And that's actually turned into where my daughter, Caroline, who's going to be turning 18 here in the summer, she's graduating from high school. Her ambition is she wants to be a photographer, but she doesn't want to be a wildlife photographer. Even though she's won all kinds of photo contests with animals from all over the United States, she wants to be a people photographer. But what she's doing is I am basically mentoring her in how to run a photography business once she graduates this June. And she is going to basically take over my social media side of things and be my social media director. The last 2 years, she and I have been shooting YouTube videos on how to be a photographer, how to set up blinds, how to do all these things. And this fall, our plan is to set up a YouTube channel and start, she's editing all these videos and getting them ready to, you know, start a YouTube channel so I can basically educate people and the things, you know, take them along kind of on these trips with us so that they can see the things that we do when I'm out in the field and that kind of thing. But, you know, having my kids with me, you know, now I'm, you know, gone, you know, about 4 months of the year with them, 3 to 4 months, you know, every year is different. We take some trips, you know, fewer trips some years than others, you know, more trips some other years. And, but I don't have to come back home and tell them, you know, about these awesome things that we see. They're the ones that remind me, hey, Dad, remember when we were here? Remember when we did this? You know, and they've got all these awesome memories that they're going to be able to share, you know, with their friends, with their family, with their kids one day, tell them about, you know, grandpa and all this kind of stuff. That stuff that, you know, is totally priceless. I mean, there's no way that they would be able to have that those memories if I was just going on plane trips by myself. And so they're able to, you know, to do these things, and we do them as a family. And, you know, it's awesome being able to have them with me and having all those memories and experiences that they would never have if, you know, we weren't able to do this. So God's really blessed us being able to do this. And it's something we dreamed of and finally has happened. And we've been doing it 6 years and just wish we could have done it all the way through. That's my only regret of the whole thing. I have no regrets with the homeschooling. Just I wish that we had been able to do it all the way through since, you know, they were itty bitty. But better late than never. And so that's what we've been doing the last 6 years.
And I can totally relate, like you said, taking your son and your daughter out and stuff. Because like with, you know, my son, when we took our trip to Texas on a hog hunt, and we hunted at a place that also had exotics. And, you know, outside of the hogs and him getting to, you know, shoot at hogs, the thing that I remember the most, the two things I remember he said, he was just like, he really enjoyed being able to shoot his bow at hogs. And he was just like, I see animals that I have never seen before. I mean, they had steers on that ranch. They had elk. They had, you know, deer and stuff, rams. Like, you know, obviously, you know, living in Texas, all kind of exotics and stuff. And we'd just be sitting in the blind or sitting in a stand, you know, waiting, you know, to shoot hogs or whatever. And there'd be like a steer that walked by, or there'd be like, you know, an elk or something, or a ram will come along and start feeding. And yeah, I think he was all more excited about seeing those than the actual hogs and stuff. And even
right,
when he comes
right.
out, you know, comes out in the blinds and stuff with me. My daughter, she doesn't like hunting. She, you know, she doesn't really care for it. But I'll also say I've never seen her turn down a plate whenever I bring stuff back and cook.
But
she has that photo bug as well. Like, she takes pictures and stuff for me. So I, like I said, I totally can relate and applaud you guys being able to, you know, like you said, homeschool and bring them along on your adventures, because it definitely does make a difference.
Yes, it does. It does. And, you know, we give up a lot. I mean, there's, you know, the days that I'm homeschooling, I'm not able to be in the office. I'm not able to send photos out to magazines. You know, there's a lot of things that we give up financially because, you know, where if we had, you know, didn't homeschool, I'd be able to have a full day of work in and stuff like that. But on the days that, you know, my wife is working, I'm having to, you know, be there and homeschool the kids. Not having to, like it's a drudgery or anything. But what I'm trying to say is I could be working and making more money than if we didn't, you know, didn't do it. If we just sent them to school and stuff like that. So we've given up a lot to be able to do it. We live more meager than we would if we both, you know, were doing our careers. But the thing is, to us, it's worth the sacrifice. It's worth the memories. It's worth the time we have with our kids. And almost everybody we meet that we tell, you know, tell about, you know, our story of what we do, they're just like, wow, I wish I could do that. That would be just so awesome. You know, instead of just having the summertime, we go during the fall. They get to see fall colors. They get to see snow, you know, stuff like that, that, you know, they would never see that down here where I live. Where I live, it's basically like desert, brush country, palm trees, orange trees kind of thing. You know, they'd never see fall colors down here because it never, there's no color change. It goes basically from green to gray for 2 weeks and then back to green, you know, so that's kind of what they're used to. So anyway, they're able to see small town USA. They're getting to experience the rural life. They're, you know, learning how to, you know, drive Polaris Rangers, you know, at 10 years old and stuff like that, you know, on the ranches right. and that kind of thing. And, you know, drive all kinds of ATVs and getting to be on tractors and just all kinds of stuff that, you know, they'd never get to experience, and just getting able to explore. You know, we'd never just open our doors up. Like when I was a kid, you know, we'd, you know, ride our bikes all over town. Well, you can't really do that nowadays in town. And, you know, we don't let our kids just go all over the place, you know, be gone the whole day and stuff like that. But when we're on these ranches and private properties, you can just let them explore. They can go down in the swamps and, you know, the just all kinds of areas and just, you know, explore. And my kids just love doing that. Just, you know, finding stuff, finding an old deer skull and, you know, finding rubs and, you know, different stuff like that. And, you know, they'll take pictures with their cell phones and stuff like that and tell me about it. And so, you know, it's a lot of stuff like that. While I'm sitting in the blind, they're still able to explore if they're not with me on that particular day.
That is amazing. That is awesome. Lance, I really appreciate you taking the time to come on and talk to me. I know you said earlier when we talked that this was your first podcast. I appreciate it. And I'm honored that, you know, you took the time to talk to me and, you know, the fact that you've never done a podcast before and that mine's the first one that you've done. I've enjoyed this. Like I said, I'm a fan of your work. I know I hate to keep repeating myself, but, you know, I've never been a big photography person until I got into the outdoors, you know, a few years ago, as far as like hunting and stuff like that. And like I said, I came across your work and, you know, not, you know, jerking your chain when I tell you your work is, you know, it's the best I've seen. And like I said, I just thank you. I appreciate it. And hopefully you'll come on again soon.
Well, I appreciate you having me. Just, you know, if people are wanting to take a look at some of my work, they can go to my website, which is Lance-Kruger.com. That's LANCE-KRUEGER.com. And I'm on Instagram if you just want to search under Lance Kruger, or it's Lance or the at symbol Lance_Kruger, KRUEGER. And I'm on Facebook under Lance Kruger Photography. And if they want to look at my stuff there, I've got, you know, tend to post every day. Like during the fall, it's just about all deer photos. During this time of the year, it's more turkey photos, bass fishing photos. But I do a lot of deer stuff because so many people that follow me are into deer. But every day I post photos. You can see my work on Facebook and on Instagram. I post, you know, my published covers. I'm one of the top, you know, deer photographers for FilmStream and Outdoor Life. Last year, in 2017, I had all the live deer covers for FilmStream and Outdoor Life with, you know, and I've got, I don't know how many photographers I compete against, but probably 20 of the top wildlife photographers in the United States. And I got all the live deer covers last year. And I almost had it happen back in 2015. Anyway, I sell, you know, photos to most of the national hunting magazines. And, you know, last fall I had Field & Stream, Outdoor Life covers, Peterson's Bow Hunting, Bow Hunting World, you know, and various ones. And, you know, published many more photos inside the magazines than the covers. The covers are kind of the gravy and the inside photos are kind of your, you know, meat and potatoes part of it. But anyway, if you look at most of the national magazines, you'll see my photos, primarily Field & Stream and Outdoor Life is two of my biggest clients. Anyway, that's kind of the top level of the, you know, hunting photography and fishing photography magazines. And so I've gotten over the 20-something years I've been doing this full-time, I've gotten to that level and one of their top guys that they, you know, publish. So I'm blessed to be at this place and enjoy my job and enjoy my life. So anyway, keep an eye out there for me on my social media and follow me. And hopefully if you make any DMs or comments or anything, I answer everybody's comments and would love to talk to you and answer any questions you might have.
Awesome. Lance, and then let me ask you this real quick, too. Do you have any of your photographs that you sell to the general public? Like, can they get those off of your website as well?
Yeah, actually, I sell prints. A lot of people buy them for their homes or their office or their deer camps. And I sell a lot of photos to businesses, from small businesses to big businesses. I got a guy that right now that's interested in using one of my photos on his business card, and he's wanting to put some prints up in his office because he's got some kind of deer management company, and he's wanting magnets for the side of his truck, and he's wanting deer photos on that. So I go from small businesses all the way to like Remington and Browning. I've sold them photos, you know, all the way to the top biggest companies. I also, last year, I did my first calendar series. I did a all whitetail deer calendar called Dream Bucks, and I did a wild turkey calendar for 2019. That's the wild turkey 2019 calendar. It's all turkeys. And then I did a mixed calendar of deer and turkeys. That was my Spurs and Antlers calendar. All those are sold out. It's sold way better than I thought. I printed up a certain amount that I thought would cover how many people would buy it. And I sold out of those, and I had to do a second printing, and I'm already sold out of those now. But I'll be doing another calendar series in 2020. So this fall sometime, I'll be, announcing those when those are for sale. But, you know, I've grown in a year and a half to 13,400 followers, and it's grown really fast. I had no idea. You know, I fought the social media thing for many years. My daughter convinced me, "Dad, you need to get into the social media thing, get with the times, quit being a dinosaur." And so I got, you know, Instagram page and Facebook page going with her help. And in, you know, 1 year, I got to 10,000 followers, and now it's a year and a half, and I'm at like 13,400 followers on just Instagram, and got about 5,000 on my my Facebook pages. And anyway, people just started saying, "Hey, we love your photos. We love looking at your photos, but how can we get some of them?" And so that's why I offer prints. That's why I started doing a calendar. And down the road, I'm sure I'll do a book or something like that, you know, so that people can, you know, have a coffee table type book of some of my photos. And with my photos on social media, and it's the same thing that I do on my, my calendars, is I not only show my photos, but with most every photo, I give a lot of information about how to photograph deer or turkeys, how to, I give a hunting tip. I'll give a behavioral tip. I'll give us the story behind the photo and try to educate people on stuff. Like the photo I did last night, it was actually a three-shot sequence of three different bucks at different ages, 2, 4, and 6 years old. And I explained to people the two top things that I like to look for in aging deer. And so there's a lot of educational type posts, and that's what I end up wanting to do this fall of 2019, starting a YouTube channel, is try to teach people how to shoot better deer photos, how to shoot better turkey photos. And hunters can learn from those things as well as photographers. You don't have to be a photographer to learn from the information I'm giving, because I give out all kinds of information that a bow hunter or a gun hunter could use in their hunting to be more successful in their hunting and learn from the things that I've learned over the last 30 years and not have to spend 30 years to figure it out themselves. They can learn from, you know, the experiences I've had and the information that I've given out. So that'll be coming up this fall. So if anybody wants to follow my Instagram or Facebook pages, I'll announce them there when you know, the YouTube channel is available and you know where to find it.
Awesome. And we're going to be on the lookout for that. Lance, once again, thank you so much, and we'll catch up with you soon, bud.
All right, man. Thanks so much for having me. I really enjoyed it.
Once again, thank you to Lance Krueger for joining me on the Bryantland Country Podcast. I hope that these two parts were as informative and helpful to you guys as they will be to me. I mean, just the stuff on setting blinds alone is going to be very helpful for me going out this season. So, like I said, thanks again to Lance. I hope you guys enjoyed it. I know I really enjoyed talking to him. Before I get out of here, I just want to remind you guys, the BryantlandCountry.com website is 90% finish. You can go online right now, BryantlandCountry.com. Take a look around. Tell me what you guys think. Tell me what you guys like, maybe what you don't like. But the website is 90% finished. It is active. You can go out, go in and take a look at it. Really appreciate the work that the folks from Modern Outdoor Media have done on my website. It looks really, really, really good and really polished. So go check it out. Poke around. The merchandise is loaded on there. So make sure you pick up you some Bryant Land merch, podcast t-shirt, Hey Turkey t-shirt, any kind of Bryantland merch. We got it on the website, bryantlandcountry.com. Make sure you check out the videos tab on there as well. We got all our past videos and stuff. So just make sure, like I said, go on there, poke around, have a seat, stay a while, take a look around, pick up a t-shirt, all that good stuff, bryantlandcountry.com. Well, that's going to be it for me. I'm going to go ahead and get on out of here. Thank you guys again for checking out the Bryantland Country Podcast, downloading and listening. We definitely appreciate it. You know the drill. Make sure you tell 5 people to tell 5 more people to listen, download the Bryantland Country Podcast. I'm going to get on out of here. I'm AB3. You guys have a good one, and we'll see you next week on the Bryantland Country Podcast.
Thanks for listening to the Bryantland Country Podcast, hosted by AB3. Please leave us a positive review and 5-star rating on iTunes. Be sure to check out our podcast section on our website, bryantlandcountry.com, for previous podcasts. Check us out on Instagram at Official Bryantland and Twitter at 3Bryantland. This has been an AB3 Media production. Join us next time for another edition of the Bryant Land Country Podcast.